This is the Oanda Podcast.
This is the Oanda Market Insight Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed.
Greetings from non-farm payroll headquarters.
Indeed, it's the first Friday of the month, and that can only be one thing. It's NFP Day. And, well, looking at the figures, jobs growth in the United States has slowed for a second month, employers adding 263,000 new jobs in September, which is almost half the average number seen so far this year. But despite the slowdown, many analysts are already saying that the Fed will need to do more to rein in rapidly rising prices. So where did this pitch, as far as you're concerned, in terms of what was already predicted?
I think there was a lot of mixed indicators leading up to this release. Earlier in the week, we had the ISM manufacturing report, where when you take a look at the employment component, it showed pretty significant weakness. And then we had the JOLTS data, which was covering the month of August, showed over a million job openings disappeared. And then ADP came in a little bit better than expected. And then we got services data. And that really showed the service sector is still you know, cranking away jobs. And I think what happened was you had a market that was hoping that you were going to see the impact of these Fed rate hikes really start to work its way through the system, and that we were going to see the labor market cool a little bit more faster. And a cooling of the labor market would help those arguments that the Fed is nearing the end of their tightening cycle. Well, this report, was it hot? No, it was. I think it came in a little bit better than expected. What this is going to do is it's going to keep that door open for the Fed to remain aggressive. A 75 basis point rate hike is still on the table. A lot of economists, analysts were expecting that if we saw some softness today, that expectation could have come down to a half point rate increase. Now, it will all, you know, come down to inflation. Next week will be key. Next Thursday is the September inflation report. And I think that will be the deciding factor as far as cementing that 75 basis point rate hike for the November FOMC meeting. But I think, you know, there's still too much. The economy is slowing, yes, but there's still a lot of strength in it. After the NFP release, you know, we've already heard from, you know, the Fed's Williams, and he said that we need to get interest rates up even further. And he's, you know, targeting that they raise rates to around 4.5% over time. So that still suggests we can still get another 125 basis points rates and increases for the rest of the year. And who knows what could happen in February. So I think overall risky assets, they, you know, did not like this report, as it vindicates the Fed. They've been extremely united in delivering a hawkish message. I can't count how many times we've heard from the Fed since the last policy decision, and it seems that they will remain consistent in saying they will be aggressive with this rate hiking campaign to fight inflation. And right now, that's not good news for risky assets. So we're seeing equities sell off a bit here. It's been weighing on gold prices. Gold tentatively breached 1700. And I think for the dollar, you know, the dollar is, it's still got some strength left in it. Yields are up nicely. And I think you're probably going to see that interest rate differential trade is not going to leave the dollar's favor anytime soon.
And it would seem that the Fed really is looking for any old excuse to keep its plan on target, isn't it?
Overall, the labor market, if you take into consideration the unemployment rate is now at 3.5%, that really suggests that we're still going to see much more aggressive tightening, because, you know, there's still, if jobless claims remain near these cycle lows, if the unemployment rate is this low, and even if we start to lose more, you know, job openings, you know, people that need work have work. People are able to to still have an opportunity to find work here, and that is going to easily keep the Fed in a position to maintain these rate hikes. Now, remember, the Fed was late to fight inflation. They were wrong about it being transitory. They were too slow in starting QT, and now they're scrambling. And you're probably going to see that they need to tilt the risks to making markets expect that there's a growing chance that we could have a severe recession here. No one's buying it right now. I think everyone still believes that the Fed is going to pivot quickly. And I think for a lot of people, they're thinking it'll take that first negative non-farm payroll to really get that going. And then, I mean, there's still this.
And then what? Do you start lowering interest rates once that happens? I
No,
mean,
you basically then are
you've reached your
you
target.
not that you've reached your target, but you probably will have a downshift. And then I think they're prepared to send this economy to recession. They're prepared to see job losses. They're prepared for economic pain. But I think once we get that those negative readings, and what's going to complicate things is you have midterm elections coming up. You have there's a whole wide reason why people expect the Fed is going to kind of change their tune for that November meeting. But I think right now the data has them committed into this stance, and that's probably going to remain in place.
I mean, taking into account the fact that we do need to rein in inflation and interest rates are a very good way of doing that, do you get the idea that central banks around the world have been waiting for an opportunity to return rates to what they historically have been over the last decades? And this is the opportunity. And, the rate of 3 to 4 to 5% was pretty normal a decade or more ago. And this is the opportunity, and it's unlikely we'll see those very, very low rates again for many years to come.
Most likely. And I think, we have to see exactly the impact of deglobalization. There's so many other variables that are going to dictate, where we end up seeing interest rates, global interest rates settle. And I think right now, though, we're in an environment here where Wall Street is really going to have to decide, how much money is going to now be poured into these like interest yielding investments that is called fixed income. We're so used to this near zero interest rate environment that it has really fueled the love for risky assets. So I think we'll see exactly how this unfolds, but I think right now still, if you're getting around 4% with your 2-year investment, you're still losing money to inflation. So we'll see exactly what happens with inflation. But I think that over the short term, it's a safe bet to anticipate more market volatility.
Okay, let's switch to a slightly earlier in the week story, and that was the announcement from OPEC Plus about a cut in production. Disappointing for the global economy, well, those countries outside of OPEC Plus, of course, the United States and Europe. And since we've seen the announcement, the price of WTI and Brent has risen, hasn't it?
Extremely. I mean, OPEC Plus basically told the world, we control the energy markets. There's not much you can do about it. And even I think there's expectations that the bullish trend is back. And the summer weakness that we saw was rather promising. It has been providing a lot of inflation relief, gas prices down significantly, and now it seems that the global energy crisis is going to be front and center as we approach the winter. And I think the problem is the world does not have enough alternative solutions to OPEC's crude. And alternative solutions include, progress with clean energy initiatives, It includes, U.S. production stuck at depressed levels. Well, 12 million is not depressed, but given the need and demand for crude and the tapping of reserves and the potential risks that are there for the economy, there's no way around it. OPEC controls prices. There's going to be a lot of action and discussions about how to best pressure OPEC. But I think over the short term, you're going to see they're going to be able to deliver this. And there's so many big wild cards here for oil. Cold winter, China's reopening. China could have a significant pickup in demand. We have to remember the U.S. is considering, they were winding down the tapping of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Now they have to consider, going down there even further. And now the problem is, we're getting to a point where some of these levels are getting too low, and it could be unsettling for the overall health of the U.S. economy. So I think you're gonna see that there's not been a lot of investment in new wells. New production is not really picking up. You've seen OPEC Plus struggle to make their production targets. So while they're slashing their target by 2 million barrels a day, the real impact is about a million, just over a million maybe. But I think you're going to see this oil market is going to remain tight. OPEC Plus is going to wait out to see how the short-term crude outlook unfolds. But I think that we're looking at an oil market that is going to be vulnerable to a lot more shocks, and I think that you have some posturing with that oil price cap on Russian crude, and Russia's saying like, okay, we can play that game, and Russia seems like they're trying to signal that they're not desperate for revenues. They won't accept prices below that cap. So we could even see more temporary oil outages or shortages, that is, in these next coming months. So I think there's so much risk right now to output, and I think you're going to see that. No, for energy traders, this is our commodity traders broadly. Oil is the favorite trade. Energy stocks are, right now they've been the one of the bright spots in the economy. Today, big red day, everything's down except for energy. Energy is the one sector up higher, and I think you're going to see that the world is going to be relying on crude for quite some time. That transition to other alternative sources of energy is taking a lot longer than anticipated. Even, this week we heard GE announcing some layoffs for some of their wind projects. So there's a this is an oil market that's going to remain, I think, supported here, and there's probably expectations that the risk for $100 oil are back, 110 probably, and if things get really ugly, then momentum could take us anywhere.
Very interesting. Okay, Ed, let's talk crypto and the outlook over the next few days and weeks. Bitcoin's been down in recent hours, hasn't it?
Yes, I think the move in global bond yields, treasury yields specifically, it's a sell-off on Wall Street, and that's dragging cryptos down. Bitcoin was, for the most part, trying to hold on to 20,000 for a good part of the week, and I think that you're seeing that crypto still very sensitive to Fed rate hike expectations, and that's going to remain the place. But the weakness in crypto is no longer like a steroid version of what's happening with tech stocks. I mean, right now the Nasdaq's down 2.5%. Bitcoin's only down 1.8%. Normally you would see Bitcoin be down two or three times that. So I think you're seeing crypto is still kind of forming, or it's still stuck in this this trading range. This is a stabilization period. A lot of long-term crypto investors, they view this as very positive. They're not expecting Bitcoin to break out right now. And I think the focus is really going to shift to how is where is the new wave of investors going to come from? Is the institutional money going to continue to pour in? And right now, it seems like that's still the case. Next week there's for crypto, it's funny because there's we talk about halving events, we talk about important updates or merges for, like for Ethereum, some of the other key events that I track are sometimes we have some key conferences where you might hear more announcements, more updates as far as what money is piling into the space. Next week, there's an Invest conference by Bloomberg, which will probably get more insight on crypto investments. Robinhood has a 2-day investor day, and remember, Robinhood they have a lot of their traders have been early to the crypto bandwagon and seeing exactly how that is unfolding and whether or not they still seek a strong bounce back for next year. I think there's a lot of interest in the space, but right now the low volatility has somewhat kept crypto a little bit grounded here. But I anticipate once we have the peak in yields, then it's going to be a race which risky asset is going to outperform. And right now a lot of people are trying to position themselves a little bit with crypto.
Right. Okay. So we've had a look back over a couple of the big stories, but let's look ahead now to the next 7 days or so. What stands out for you? What should we look out for?
Well, next week it's all about inflation. Inflation data from the US. But what's interesting is, normally we get CPI, then PPI. This week we get PPI first on Wednesday. Wednesday, we also get the FOMC minutes. Expectations are we're not ex really going to see a lot of pricing relief. And I think that when you take a look at the move in oil prices, it started to recover towards the end. So I think there's going to be some fears that if let's say these pricing pressures remain in place, but maybe they're cooling a little bit. The next month is going to see a sharp increase in energy costs. So we'll see exactly how that plays out. It's all about inflation data. I think the baseline for many is the Fed is going to deliver another 75 basis point rate increase as long as inflation does not, I mean, as long as we don't see a 7 handle on the year-over-year CPI reading on Thursday, I think you're probably going to see it's expectations for the Fed to remain as hawkish as they have been will be the way things play out. There's a lot of focus too in the FX markets with both what the BOE and the BOJ will be doing. I think that Monday is going to be interesting because US bond markets are closed for the holiday. The Japanese yen is at 145. And so as we trade around, prior intervention levels, you illiquid conditions with a bank holiday could prove to be advantageous. You might get a little bit more bang for your buck if you're intervening in the market. So it'll be interesting to see if that is a course of action that the BOJ takes. I think that in addition to that, all eyes will be on the BOE's decision. I mean, as that emergency bond buying is set to end on the 14th, they're going to have to replace it with something. And so we'll see that be a key FX driver. And then I think there's two other events that I have circled on my calendar. We get a Chinese inflation data, but I think trade is going to be a little bit more important, seeing if we have any building of momentum in China. And then one of my favorite events, the kickoff of earnings season. It is here. That's on Friday. We'll hear from JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley. They're going to give us the latest assessment on the health of the U.S. consumer. We'll learn about credit card spending, delinquencies. That is very insightful. That will give us an idea of how strong consumers are, what to expect for the holiday season, and more importantly, if the banks are rather pessimistic for the consumer, that's just going to continue to fuel those Fed pivot calls. And but if they show that the consumer is still hanging in there and doing okay, then you could see markets then start to capitulate and start to believe that, okay, maybe the Fed can do a little bit more tightening. So always important to listen to the big banks. They see where the money is going in and out of for the American consumer. So that's going to be key. So it's going to be a busy week. Also, there's G20 finance ministers and central bankers meeting in Washington. A lot to cover, but those were the key highlights for me.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, Ed. Have an excellent weekend.
Thank you. You too.
This is the Oanda Podcast.